Right, let's take a look at another of our top stories today. Iran's supreme leader has accused Donald Trump of stirring protests in the country, in which 9 people died last night. President Trump has praised protesters for finally acting against the regime. Let's get more for you on this with our Washington correspondent, Simon Marks, who joins me live from the US. Very good evening to you, Simon.
Hello, Chris. Our first one of the new year.
Yes, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Talk us through what Donald Trump has been saying on Twitter on what is effectively his first day back in the Oval Office at work.
Yes, first day of the new term, and he has been relentless on Twitter over the last few hours. I've got to say, I mean, I'm a busy man, and I do a fair bit on Twitter. You'd think that Donald Trump, as President of the United States, would be an even busier man and wouldn't have time to do quite so much on Twitter, but apparently it's been pretty quiet in the Oval Office this morning because he's been tweeting about all sorts of things, I suppose prime among them, Iran. This is the third day running that he's indicated support for the protesters on the streets of Iran, who of course are demanding the overthrow of the hardline clerical regime that governs in Tehran. And in his latest intervention on this particular subject, he writes, "The people of Iran are finally acting against the brutal and corrupt Iranian regime." He then hits out at his predecessor, Barack Obama. "All of the money that President Obama so foolishly gave them," he typed, "went into terrorism and into their pockets. The people in Iran," he says, "have little food, big inflation, and no human rights. The US is watching." And as I say, he has returned to this theme every day for the last 3 days. Yesterday, he said that Iran was failing at every level, despite the terrible deal made with them by the Obama administration. So he loses no opportunity to hit out at President Obama, who, of course, along with America's European allies, signed that nuclear deal with Iran that President Trump has criticized continually since he became a candidate for the US presidency. And this is an indication, as President Trump has himself put it in recent days, that the United States stands with the people of Iran. But what he doesn't explain is why, if the US stands with the people of Iran, America's borders are closed to refugees and migrants from Iran, because, of course, Iran is one of those countries that is covered by the president's revised travel ban, which so far the courts have kept in place.
Now, as you mentioned, Donald Trump, being the president, being very busy on Twitter, he's also been talking about Pakistan. America's ambassador to Pakistan has been summoned to its foreign ministry after President Trump threatened to cut aid to the country over claims it provides safe havens for terrorists. Now, it's not the first time one of America's ambassadors has been summoned to a foreign ministry, is it, Simon?
No, absolutely. And it's worth putting all of this into historic perspective as well, Chris. The United States and Pakistan, in the days of the Cold War, had a very warm relationship, whereas the United States and India did not have a warm relationship. India was aligned with Moscow. Indeed, if you visit New Delhi and you ever get the chance to take a wander through Nehru Park in Delhi, you will see one of the last remaining statues of Vladimir Lenin in that park, I think pretty much anywhere in the world at this point. But now everything has changed, with Donald Trump continuing a series of chilly relationships with the Pakistanis that were first, I suppose, experienced by George W. Bush in the aftermath of the September the 11th attacks, then, of course, by Barack Obama, and now President Trump saying that despite having received over $30 billion in U.S. humanitarian assistance over the last 15 years, the only thing that Pakistan, he wrote, has given the United States is lies and deceit. The Pakistanis hit back and said, well, the only thing the United States has given us is mistrust and invective. And it's pretty apparent that this fury on the part of President Trump over the fact that he says the Pakistanis are continuing to offer safe havens for terrorists and are not doing enough to battle Islamic extremism on Pakistani soil and also along the border with Afghanistan, that, he argues, is a reason to stop aid payments. And there's a $225 million aid payment that the president put on hold back in August. It now seems highly unlikely that that he's going to approve it being sent to Pakistan anytime soon. And I think there are now real questions about how this US relationship with Pakistan can move forward from here, given that the governments on both sides are using, pretty coarse language about one another. And I certainly can't remember the relationship having been frostier.
Yeah, and Simon, this sort of tweet storm from the White House continued. Donald Trump, famous for taking credit for things that might not necessarily have anything to do with him, this time the lack of commercial airline facilities in 2017.
Absolutely. And as I say, he's been covering a whole range of topics since dawn broke here, the first working day of the year. But I suppose one of the more remarkable claims related to commercial aviation, he wrote 3 hours ago, "Since taking office, I have been very strict on commercial aviation. Good news, it was just reported that there were zero deaths in 2017, the best and safest year on record." The President of the United States there seeming to claim responsibility for American aviation's safety record last year. Unfortunately for him, the facts suggest that there hasn't been a death on an American carrier in the skies over the United States since 2009. So I'm not quite sure where he's getting this best and safest year on record. I think that's if you look at the international aviation picture, not just the American one. But nonetheless, he's been taking credit for that. He's also been offering a lesson in journalism, Chris, for all of us, because the New York Times today unveiled the identity of its new publisher, A.G. Sulzberger. And Donald Trump offers him his congratulations and then says, "Here is the last chance for the Times to fulfill the vision of its founder, to give the news impartially without fear or favour." And he urges the paper to treat the President of the United States fairly so that the next time I and the people win, you won't have to write an apology to your readers for a job poorly done. Now, again, the facts kind of get in the way of that because they didn't write an apology last time around when Donald Trump won the American presidency. But it's interesting that he says there, the next time I and the people win. Is that an indication that he might be thinking of running for a second term in the Oval Office? We'll have to wait for more tweets before we can read those particular tea leaves clearer.
When would he have to make a decision on that?
Well, I think by this time next year, he's really going to be, I think that's going to be a front burner issue for him. I mean, I think realistically, he's likely to wait until the outcome of the midterm elections here in November. One third of the Senate and the entire House of Representatives will be up for grabs then. He'll want to know how those elections go. They are, after all, going to be something of a referendum on Donald Trump's time in office. But, you know, traditionally, by the time we're all trudging back to work next January, that would be the moment for the President of the United States, I think, really to be starting to give a clear indication about his intentions to run again or his intentions to endorse someone else for the job.
Mm. I was just reading one of the papers this morning, Simon, that just 18 days before Donald Trump completes his first year as president, he's now on track to exceed 2,000 false or misleading claims, according to a database that this particular newspaper has been tracking.
Yeah, that's the Washington Post. Absolutely.
Yes. They've been categorising and tracking every suspect statement that was uttered by the president. So 1,950 claims in 347 days, an average of 5.6 claims a day. And that was yesterday. So no doubt they'll have more.
Yeah, well, I was saying on Twitter earlier in one of my few tweets of the day so far that I think that average must be higher as a result of this absolutely remarkable series of tweets that he's been putting out since dawn broke this morning. So it'll be interesting to see how that average changes. Interesting, too, to keep an eye on that over the course of the next 12 months to see if that habit continues, whether he continues to present what his White House staff describes as alternative facts, or whether he manages to act more like his predecessors in the White House, many of whom also, of course, have told falsehoods and accentuated things in their favour, but none of whom have notched up this extraordinary tally of presenting the American public with misleading information.
Well, he shall continue to watch and learn from President Trump's Twitter account. Thank you very much, Simon Marks, our US correspondent, live for us from Washington.